You are about to experience Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. Fortunately, you are about to hear lots of opinions, but rarely any facts. Impersonations might occur, but good luck trying to figure them out. This program is not intended for kids or the easily offended. Listener discretion is advised. You have been warned. You press play. It's too late to stop. Get ready to podcast.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here, and today I am joined with, I guess the best way to describe my guest is someone who is a very ambitious man who has a lot of fingers in different pies and is very successful in doing so. Straight out of Arizona, Mr. Greg DeMarco. Greg, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing amazing. I just appreciate you having me on for this, and hopefully we can give the listeners a good time and they can learn and grow. And yeah, I'm super excited. Honored to be asked.
Oh, thank you. We're very privileged to have you. And let me start.
Honored to be considered somebody you don't hate.
I know. Right. There's very few people on that list. So thank God. But speaking of doing, you know, podcasts and, you know, being ambitious, you run the Chair Shot website and podcast network. For those who don't know anything about it, can you fill them in, the listeners in, on what it is, where they can find it, and why they should pay attention?
Yeah, no, definitely. So I started the Chair Shot in 2017 with some other podcasters. I had been podcasting since 2011, started writing about wrestling at 411 Mania back in 2010. And just wanted to grow that and kind of do my own thing. And we started the Chair Shot, and it's just gone through a lot of iterations. We had news for a while, but news is so impossible to keep up with. But it's heavily opinionated. It's opinion-based, and it's really just about enjoying what we have to offer and enjoying this business that we all love so much. And the Chair Shot Radio Network is just a collection of podcasters about wrestling and outside of wrestling. About 2 years ago, a little less than a year and a half ago, we had some folks that wanted to start a podcast on pop culture called Bandwagon Nerds. And that was my co-host, Patrick O'Dowd, who's been podcasting me with a decade in May, and some others. And so I greenlit that. And that just kind of paved the way for some sports shows on the Chair Shot Radio Network. And a lot of, we got a video game show now, just a whole lot. So while wrestling is still our bread and butter, there's a lot of content that wrestling fans would enjoy. Sure. What you're not going to get is the cookie cutter approach to wrestling. Now, my belief in podcasting is somewhat different than others. And you know this as being a podcaster. Everybody talks about the same stuff. Same. Can I say shit or just
anything? Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Everybody talks about the same shit. We just do. So it's because that's just what there is to talk about. And while I can't stand sitting down on a podcast and going like match by match over a pay-per-view or something like that, like it's just not my thing. There are people out there that are great at it, and let them do it. But to me, it's podcasting about the people. And that's why you tune in. That's why you listen. You don't tune in to any one of my podcasts because I'm talking about Raw or I'm talking about, you know, talking shit about AEW or whatever. You're tuning in because it's me, because it's Patrick O'Dowd, it's Miranda Morales, it's, you know, whoever else that we have together on our shows talking about these topics. And so it's about the personalities more than topics. And so that's what we focused on the Chair Shot, is making sure that people have that freedom and that leeway to be themselves. And that's when they really excel and grow. And some can't. Some have this need to go out there with the cookie cutter IWC approach, cover things match by match. And they just usually they fizzle out because they can get burnt out by that. But when you pick one topic and just talk about it, sometimes you go off the rails and talk about a million other things. That's entertaining. That's fun. And that's what really matters. No one's going to remember in 3 weeks that you talked about, you know, Bob Lashley winning the WWE championship and how he's not going to hold it past WrestleMania. But they'll remember that you made them laugh, that you made them think, that you made them smile, and that's why they tune back in. So that's what we're really focused on the Chair Shot Radio Network and the ChairShot.com. We are all about the opinionated content. Tell us what you think. What I can't stand is when I read an article, and by the end of it, it's the I still don't know what the person thought. Like, right. They ask a question in their title, and at the end, they're like, it could really go either way. And I was like, I just read 1,000 words to see that it could go either way. Like, no, like, tell me what you think. And so that's my thing. You know, I was kind of brought up on the Jim Rome theory of have a take and don't suck. Even if I don't agree with you, I don't care. Just have something and bring something to the table. That to me is entertaining.
Yeah. And I think it's, it kind of goes hand in hand with, just, I would say entertainment in general, but specifically in wrestling terms, no one likes a cookie cutter. You know, you look at, like, as soon as John Cena got labeled cookie cutter, the fans turned on him. Same with Roman. It's, you know, it's the expectations of if something's a little different, if a personality catches you a little differently, then it becomes successful. As, you know, we've seen with Roman Reigns, all of a sudden go from the most hated to probably the most hated but loved guy in the business by simply just doing a different aspect of that personality.
Oh, yeah. When I wrote my first article at 411 Mania, and Larry Zonka, you know, rest in peace, passed away last year, when he gave me a column that he was writing, and so it had a dedicated audience already, I wrote it, I publish it, whatever, it goes up. The next day, I go on and I see all these comments, and they either loved it or they hated it. And I realized, okay, that right there was lesson number one. All that matters is that you elicit emotion.
Yeah.
If they didn't care, they wouldn't say anything. And so to me, that's a cookie cutter approach. And you break it, how you break that mold. And to do that, you have to not be afraid. You have to not be afraid to do things a little bit differently. What's interesting, though, is that sometimes you need the cookie cutter to then break out of the cookie cutter. You talk about John Cena, who now everybody loves John Cena.
Right.
You talk about Roman Reigns. Now everybody loves Roman Reigns. Well, the reason everybody loves Roman Reigns is because he's finally not what they hated before.
Yeah.
But he had to be what they hated so they could love him now. And if he had started off as the heel they wanted him to be, they'd hate him now.
Right.
So it's very, very much, you know, people don't even kind of really know what they like sometimes. And it's and they need to be kind of fed that a little bit and taught that. And then they respond and they love it and they enjoy it. And that's really what it's about.
Well, and speaking along those lines, when you're promoting the IZW in Arizona, you know, you have quarterly events. My question is, when you think of that that attention span or that fickleness that fans can have, what are the positive aspects of running quarterly shows and what are the negative aspects of running quarterly shows?
That's such a loaded question and a great question and one that I love talking about. Because there's so many, so from a booking perspective, and that's the great thing about when you're a promoter, you wear many hats. And for me, one of them is you know, holding the book. It's very much, yeah, I'm still booking. Like, you could take these quarterly events and run them weekly, and they'd make sense.
Right.
It's just that people are willing to wait and have that anticipation because they know that we're going to deliver, right? We've got a great formula, and we know that we're going to deliver when that bell rings and when they walk through the door each and every quarter. Thankfully the talent is, you know, remains available. Oh, that's a challenge. Sometimes it's a talent situation can change.
Right.
And we have plans that for some people would span 6 months, but for me, it might take 2 years to pull off those plans because of, and that was pre-COVID, just because of the fact that we run quarterly events. February of 2020, we ran an event and we had a Monster is the name of the event. It now takes place every February, which is a hilarious story because I didn't even want to do a battle royal show. I did one just to get us to the next event. It sold out and we didn't expect, we thought the next event was going to be the first sellout.
Wow.
And then everyone's like, you got to do this every year now. And so now I do it every year. But Watson, who you're familiar with
from,
you know, he works FSW, he wins Monster and he cuts his promo afterwards. And instead of saying May, he accidentally says March. And the entire audience starts chanting, we want March. We want March.
Oh,
and we're back there, myself and the guy that I promote these with, Navajo Warrior. We're just laughing. And we're like, we start chanting, you're getting May. Because that's the other aspect of it. And you could talk to, I know you talk to Joe DeFalco all the time.
Sure.
It takes a ton to put these on. And I've got a wife. I've got two kids. I've got a job. I've got a website. I've got, you know, all the other things that are going on in my life that we'll probably talk about. And so to put on these events and to do it right and to do it well takes a ton of energy, a ton of effort, and it just wears you out. And when we brought this back, we didn't want what it was in the past. IZW used to be weekly or biweekly back in the day. From 2000 to 2010, it ran every other Tuesday at a bar, basically. And the bar shut down, and so did the company. Like, that's just kind of the way it worked out. You lost your venue, and everybody was tapped out. And so when we agreed to bring it back, it was like, we've got to do it differently. And that's what allows us to do that there. The great thing about it is it's like I get to promote. I get to run from Royal Rumble to WrestleMania to SummerSlam to Survivor Series. Like, I get to put on four big events per year. IZW is not a, you know, it's a happening. Every time it happens, it's a big deal. Right. We keep it special by only doing four per year. That allows us to do that and to bring it through. And the talent gets geared up for the IZW events because they know they only get four shots a year if they're booked on all of them to really deliver. And our audience is different. Our audience is different than if you go to some of the companies that run regularly, because we have some of the old school IZW fans that don't go to anything else.
Right.
And so for them, they're excited to see the wrestlers they have and the mix that we have, because we have a mix of the old stars from the back in the original days of IZW who don't really work anywhere else anymore, and then the up and coming stars who are, you know, busting their ass trying to, you know, drive to Vegas, driving to California, driving to Colorado, Texas, wherever, to get bookings and experience. And when you bring it all together, there's just no other show like it in the world. And that's why, you know, that's what makes it great. And we got some buy-in from the fans. If I do something stupid, something that doesn't make sense, I can usually recover from it pretty easily, which is nice.
What does it mean to you to have Navajo running it with you in terms of, I mean, you know, I'll joke with him, you know, about his age, because, you know, he was a veteran in 2000 when I was training in UPW, you know, so it's fun to see that perspective, but it's also to me very invaluable to have minds like his that come from the era that, you know, we came from, where it's, you know, the storytelling was the primary focus of matches, the way to lay things out, the way to use the audience, to use, you know, the rest holds, to work smarter, not harder. What does that encompass for you to have that kind of presence alongside you in these events?
It's invaluable. When I ran PHX Wrestling back in 2016, before I had to stop for some medical issues, even back then, I assigned an agent, a veteran, to every single match. Like, it was something that I always saw the value in. When we did the original IZW, and I joined right around 2008, I was with RPW, which is Rising Phoenix Wrestling, which is basically a bunch of fans running a wrestling company. Thought we knew everything. We knew nothing. And I was just an announcer, and I was trying to scratch by. And when Navajo became so busy and wasn't able to be at every event, somebody else started booking. They really couldn't book. So I started emailing that person ideas, and they just started using all my ideas. And I remember one event, one of the wrestlers had a bunch of questions. And at one point, the guy was just like, just ask Greg. It was his idea anyway. And so at that point, everyone knew, okay, you're booking this stuff. And when you fast forward to now, I produced what was called a reunion show for IZW.
Right.
Like, I came on board after it was announced. I was the producer behind it. And at that point, that's when Navajo and I sat on it for a couple of weeks. We both independently were like, we want to do this. We can't do it without the other person, but nobody wanted to ask. And so finally, I talked to some people. They said, if you do it, I'll be there. And then I called him up and we were like, let's do this. And we decided to do it. But having his perspective is amazing. First of all, you talked about all the things, the storytelling, the rest holds, how to do all that. We still do that. That's what we do in IZW. Right. We don't try to do a lot of spots to the floor. We really try to focus on working the crowd. We don't have a hard camera, and because we film kind of in the round a little bit, and we really focus on the live event aspect of it. So you got to work all four sides of the ring. You got to work the audience, not the camera. Right. And that's, I think our fans like that. And that's why our experience is so different. But he also, like, I primarily book everything in IZW, but we also, I'll bounce ideas off of him. And even lately we had one, I was just like, okay, we're going to finish the match this way. Then this person's going to attack this person afterwards. And he was like, everybody always attacks somebody. Let's have them do a stare down, kind of a nod where they realize they're going to get a one-on-one match. This was a triple threat, like just little things that he's seen a million times.
Right.
So it's like, okay, if we do it this way, it's going to be a little bit different and a little bit easier and a little bit better. And that experience is amazing. It also helps when you have a 30-year veteran. Independent wrestling is, by all means, it's for us especially, it's a cash-based show-to-show business, right? Event-to-event business. And you can pull off bigger things when the Navajo Warrior asks for those things and not Greg DeMarco. So if I know something that I think we can pull off and it's like, okay, this could be big, it could be too expensive or whatever, I'll be like, hey, can you ask about this? And he'll get, if it's possible, he gets it. And it's just, you know, we have that advantage because of the 30 years of goodwill that he's established by being this respected veteran, by doing it the right way, by treating people fairly and work hard, treat people fairly, earn respect. That's Adam Pierce's mantra, and they are good friends. So, and I'm lucky enough to benefit and have that same relationship with Adam Pierce. But it is, that's what's built, you know, that's what IZW is really built on its foundation. And he brings that about. And even when he finally stops wrestling, and there is no timetable for that, by the way. People ask me all the time. We didn't have 30 last year, which is a 30-year celebration. People thought it was his retirement show. Like, no, he's not retiring. He's not going away anytime soon. But even if he did, he's still going to be there. He's still going to have that influence. He's still going to do everything that he does backstage. Because that's just the environment that we've created. But I can't even put into words how lucky I am to do this with him, do this with Morgan, his wife, and to be able to put on these events. Like, it's just, we love it. We have a blast every single time. It's something that we, you know, as people, we look forward to. And normally when you're running wrestling events, it's a source of stress. And it helps that you we're always sold out before we even show up at the building. But it's just, we're just there. It's just a good time. It's something we get to look forward to four times a year, and we love doing it. And at the end it's over and we hug and we're just like, we did another one and it feels amazing. And that's a large part of both of our efforts, but having him, having that influence, that 30-year veteran to look at things in his own way, is just, I can't even accurately describe how beneficial it is and how lucky I am to get to do that.
What are some of the names of talent that you are excited about right now in Arizona? There's a lot of good stuff going on, and I just want to kind of get your perspective on who some of those people are that you feel are moving in the right direction towards becoming very well known, either on the indie circuit or getting signed eventually.
It's funny because IZW, back in its original run, was associated with, had a wrestling school. And so the events were largely to give the students an opportunity to work and grow and become named talents. And we don't have a school now. And that's something that went away a long, long time ago. But we're associated with a school. There is an Pro Wrestling Training Center. Yep. And we use students from another school as well. And so we still get to have that aspect of it. And then the younger talent. We recently crowned our first heavyweight champion in over a decade. We did so at Monster 2021. And the winner of that was a guy by the name of Thugnificent. And Thugnificent, who was part of a tag team with EJ Sparks, the Regulators, he's just a crowd player. He's a heel, right? He's a heel. And having him team with EJ, who's a babyface, they were going to eventually either turn, or EJ was going to convince Thugnificent, you know, or Thugnificent was going to turn EJ heel, and they were going to be a heel tag team. They were so over, and every time he cheated, it got a bigger pop. That I was just like, "No, they're baby faces. They're baby faces who cheat." And so I just kept him on the baby face side. And here we go. And when it came time to crown a champion, we had a few options, and he was one of them. And we put the belt on him, and everybody was in shock, including him. And it was just a great. And that's an amazing story behind that. But he may not have known he was winning when he won. But just fact that
He might have not known he was winning when he won.
All right. I'll answer the rest of the question, but I'll pause for that story. He did not know he was winning. So we're super organized. So when you come to an IZW event backstage, we have a typed out format. We have everything timed out. We have who's assigned to the matches. We have notes for the ring announcer, notes for the interviewer. We have everything. It's all there. Notes for the talent. I don't give them too much. I don't say, here's all the spots you need to do. I'm like, here's the goal. Here's the story. Right. Here's the story I want you to tell. Here's who's going over. Here's how they should go over. And when I say how, I mean pinfall, submission, whatever. I don't tell them, hit them with this move or do whatever. We let talent do that, which I think part of the reason why it works. And even for promos, here's the main point I want you to get across. I'm not going to script your promo unless you ask me. And sometimes they ask me, what should I say? And then we kind of talk through it. But on the rundown, it said somebody else was winning. And when he got to the building, I grabbed him. I was like, hey, you're in the final two. And he was like, I'm in the final two? Like, you trust me being in the final two? And I'm laughing because I'm like, you're going over. And sure enough, it came down to the final two. And the first spot with the final two was a roll up. He was supposed to roll up the other guy, the Hawaiian Lion, who's 20-year veteran in IZW. And at that point, everybody assumed was going to win since it was the last two and he was one of them against a tag team guy. Right. And a guy who, by the way, had never even scored a pinfall win in IZW since he came back. His team had won, but EJ always scored the win. Or he ate the pin. And that was, you know, even bigger moment. He rolls him up, you know, ref counts one, ref counts two. And he realizes Hawaiian Lion's not kicking out. And he told me about it afterwards. He's like, kick out, kick out. And Hawaiian Lion grabs his arm, holds it tightly, and says, no. And the ref hand hit three, and he won. And there's a picture that I'm going to release. And you can see where the ref's hand is holding, you know, ref's got his hand raised, and he's looking at Hawaiian Lion, and he's shocked because he had no idea.
That's amazing.
And that was, again, the idea of the 30-year veteran.
Yeah.
Let's not tell. I was like, I won't tell him until we get there. And he was like, let's not tell him at all. Let's let him find out during the match. And then we figured we'd smarten him up during the match. But no, literally until the ref's hand hit three, he didn't know that he was going over. And so when he cut that promo afterwards, where he talks about working all of his life for a moment like this and this and that, it was real.
Yeah.
It was real emotion. And he told people that. He was like, this is really me talking right now. And that meant the world to me because he's been a champion in other promotions. He's been the top champion of the promotions. But this is the biggest moment of his career. That is a testament to what we've built and what Navajo Warrior built going back to 2000 when he started this and what we've been able to revive and even take to the next level now. But yeah, he had no idea whatsoever. Wow. Even afterwards, he's so appreciative. He's taking Instagram videos where he's like out on a boat with the title. He was wearing it while he's at the gym. Like, he just loves that thing. It's a beautiful belt anyway, but he loves it. He's won. His partner, EJ Sparks, is a big, big time talent, big star, held a lot of championships already and is just such a good performer. We have guys like Charles Cassius, R3, who is a great big man. And IZW is a great place for a big man because you've got talent like the Navajo Warrior to help teach you how to be a big man, especially in a world of – it's no longer the land of the giants. It's not that at all. And so a giant – you have to know how to work with guys smaller than you and make it believable, and that's something that he can learn from all that. You know, we've got talent like his partner, Evan Daniels, who rejoined us back in November and has done a great job. Out of Vegas, we've got some people that are great. Tyler Cintron, who was a big name in Vegas, then left and then came back to Vegas. I've known him for a few years. Morgan, when she was in Utah, trained him. And so when we needed a spot to be filled, she pitched his name. He came down and it was just like, you know, he wanted to keep coming. I've known him for years. He came on a podcast of mine and within 30 seconds was dropping his real name on the air. Like, I was like, this guy's different. And he looks at the business differently, but he's great. He's so talented and he does what you do. He's like, how few spots can we do in this match? And yet he walked through the curtain for his first match in IZW. No one had ever seen him before in our building. He walked through the curtain, hadn't worked in a year thanks to COVID. And by the time he got from the entryway to the ring, he was over as a heel. Like, didn't – no microphone in his hand, no nothing. He was – everyone hated him by the time he got to the ring. So that's something special, right? Yeah. That takes talent to do that. And so he's a great talent that we have as well. Another one that I know you know and Graves is someone that I have loved working with, have worked with in the past. And Graves – also looks at the business differently, very differently. And the thing that he has going for him is a lot like what you hear about Brock Lesnar in WWE. If this was not scripted, he'd never lose. He's just that level of talented.
You know,
he's held, you know, won worlds in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Like, he can do whatever he wants. He knows how to sell. He knows how to tell a story. He knows how to do all of that, regardless of the size of the opponent that he's working with. And just even at our last event, Monster, he was supposed to enter the Monster at like 6 or 7 and asked to come in earlier because he wanted to tell a longer story. And so we flipped him around. He came in at number 3 and told this big, long story until he was eliminated.
Wow.
And we're doing in May, on May 15th, we're doing a Bloodsport match with him and Hawaiian Lion. And we're taking the ropes off. Oh. I know it's happened in Vegas. It's never happened in Arizona before.
Wow.
And those two guys are going to tear it up. And it's going to be an amazing thing. And it's something that our fans have never seen. And so they get to do that. And I'm excited about that. Then you got guys like Watson, who's been up in Vegas. There's a younger talent by the name of Mr. Classic, who is so good. and such a great heel.
Yeah.
And is just waiting for that opportunity. And he holds Party Hard Wrestling's championship out here in Arizona as well, but a great heel and just continues to grow and develop and better himself. And he's going to do big things for us in the future. And just so many of the younger talents that we're bringing along, and we believe we're bringing them along the right way.
Right.
When you show up in our locker room, it's very different. And I know for a fact that some of these people act differently in other locker rooms, probably ways that I wouldn't like, but they don't in ours, because ours is different, because they know it's not going to be tolerated around the people that we bring in. Because we bring in veterans. We bring in Mercury Yaden from Colorado, who at one point was in charge of travel and talent relations for TNA.
Right.
So that's an amazing amount of experience that he brings in, and he helps age in our matches as well. And he brings in young talent with him for an opportunity to work and grow and cultivate as well. So it's just an amazing group of people. And I even mentioned, you know, Keepers of the Faith, Don Vitale and Gabe Gallo, who they run the school out here that we work with, and they're always backstage at our events. Their students are our security, and and they're an amazing part of what we do. I got to give two of their students their first ever payday at our last
event.
And they had to work their trainers. They had to work Dom and Gallo and get their asses handed to them, literally. And what I got to, they will always know that, you know, IZW and Greg DeMarco gave them the first payday. Yeah. So it's, and one of them's working our next event. He's booked on the next one. So it's really all about that growth and development. So a year from now, 2 years from now, I hope somebody asks me this question again, because the answer might be different.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing about what we do and what independent wrestling is like. But there's only so many spots at the bigger companies. But I know that there will be talent from our events that you'll see on television at some point.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And you're seeing way more of a presence out of Arizona, which for the longest while was very very much like the desert itself, just kind of dry and not a lot going on. So it's wonderful to see kind of a rebirth or a re-renaissance coming out of Arizona. And then if you put together, you know, Utah, Arizona, Vegas, California, the West Coast becomes this monster. Yeah. It's, and then you could even go up to like to Portland as well. Mm-hmm. And you just look at the coast and you go, man, you know, you look at the talent that's going to major companies, and it's not like it used to be where it was just guys from New York and, you know, the surrounding areas in Florida. So it's wonderful to see. Now, you personally have gone on, you know, a big journey. You kind of mentioned your health. What has it been for you since being diagnosed with the leukemia? Has it been, you know, have you been able to combat your own thoughts? Because I know that some friends that I've had who have gone through diagnoses of either leukemia or cancer, it's almost for them always a constant battle every day to wake up and know that they are, you know, they're going to just take this down and, you know, just live the best life that they can because they're fighters. Has that been something that's been, you know, coming to you in terms of, you know, that fighting aspect and knowing that you're, you know, you're going to flourish for the next, you know, 50 years of your life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question, Matt. And I can tell you, for starters, it came at the tail end of a big fitness journey for me. I had lost, at that point, I think I was down 80 pounds. And right around Christmas, I weighed myself. I don't weigh myself more than like once a month because it can negatively impact people's brains. I see it all the time.
Yep.
I talk to people all the time. I'm like, stop weighing yourself every day. It's insane. Twice a day, some people, it's like, you're crazy. Yeah. But it's, so I lost about 80 pounds, and that had changed me as well. That had put in this aspect of me, and I'd kind of been on this journey about what it means to be a man and to be a fighter and to do all that stuff and to push through. And that mental toughness was a big part of what the weight loss and CrossFit, which I started back in May of last year, had imparted on me, because it's just as much mental as it is physical.
Right.
And a few days after that, after I you know, weighed in and I was down to 200 when I was at 1.280, I get diagnosed with CML, which is chronic myeloid leukemia. And when they, so my doctor had noticed a spike in my white blood cell count and blood work. And this goes back to summer of 2020. And so they retest and they do all this stuff. And after all that, they're like, okay, we got to send you the specialist. And it's a hematologist / oncologist. So one's blood and one's cancer. And so I think I'm going there for the hematologist side, right? Like, oh yeah, it's just blood and whatever. And he's going through that. And he's like, we take this. And because you have, there's five different types of white blood cell. And if one's up, it means this. Another means this. And if all five is up, it means this. And that was the diagnosis of chronic myeloid leukemia. Hmm. And I remember being like, wait, he just basically said, I'm a cancer patient. Like, that's insane, you know, and that hits you. And I remember texting my two best friends, and both of them was like, well, they're best friends with a cancer patient now. And it was just, it just hits you that way.
Yeah.
And I remember he even, and we talked about different things, like, yeah, I've lost a bunch of weight. He was like, you can't stop going to the gym. You have to keep going. Your body responds better to treatment when you do that. And so from day one, I remember having my wife was, you know, because of COVID, she's waiting out in the parking lot. And I get in the car and I tell her, yeah, I have chronic myeloid leukemia. And she was, and all she heard was the word leukemia. And she was like, the guy I've been married to for 22 years just told me he has leukemia. Like, that's, you know, blows her away. 21 and a half years. It'll be 22 May. And, wow. And so, you know, she started crying. Like, she didn't know what to think, what to say. I remember telling my kids and my daughter, who's 12, I remember her first comment. She was like, when she thinks of leukemia, you know, because of all the commercials you see, she thinks of bald children. And that's because that's what you see. Yeah. CML, chronic myeloid leukemia, is basically the lowest form of leukemia.
Right.
It's and I'd say this, it's easy. And usually I say for you wrestling fans, but I know in something like this, I don't have to say that. It's what Roman Reigns has.
Right.
That's same form of leukemia that Roman Reigns has. I didn't know that until I got it. And I first thing looked it up and I was like, you know, Roman Reigns leukemia. And I saw an article and he talks about how he has CML. And I remember all this, you know, wrestling news, you know, which we always joke, you know, wrestling news with a Z, questioned if he had leukemia because he didn't lose his hair and all this stuff. And I know you can tell, like, I still have a beautiful head of hair and it hasn't gone anywhere. And I'm 44 years old and never lost any of it. So hopefully it'll stay. But the treatment is basically I take two pills a day or four pills a day, two in the morning, two at night. And it can have some side effects here and there, stomach related, this and that. The biggest side effect for me is muscle fatigue, which sucks because I CrossFit. And so I'm out there working my ass off and not getting the same results that I got 2 months ago because I started treatment on December 2nd, or I'm sorry, February 2nd. Like, I literally did a workout the Friday before last, which is part of the CrossFit Open, which is a whole other story. And we did the same one in January, and my time was 2 minutes worse. In January, I did it in 17-something, and in March, I did it in 19-something. And that's solely because of the treatment that I'm on.
Right.
But that's just what it is, right? That stuff's keeping my white blood cells in check so that they don't become cancer, since they don't become something bigger that I can't live with forever. But the fact is, like you said, I can live with this for the next 50 years. As long as I'm continuing my treatment and taking care of myself, I can live the same life I would have lived if I was never diagnosed, if I never had chronic myeloid leukemia. Thankfully, I got the blood work done because there's no symptoms.
Right.
You don't wake up one day, feel bad, and go to the doctor. Like, they detect it in your blood work, and then that's how you find out you have it. There are no symptoms associated with this. That's why it's considered rare, is because most people don't find out they have it until it's already become something else. So I'm lucky that my wife scheduled a doctor's appointment for me and made me go, because, you know, as men, we're horrible about that. And I didn't either. And so because I went, that's what happened. But yeah, I wake up every day and it is definitely a renewed passion for life that you have when you realize this could be way worse. And it's weird to think, as a person who has leukemia, I feel lucky because I know it could have been far worse. I know I could have not found out until 2 years from now and it'd be something that I can't remember. Now I have to go through chemotherapy and I have to deal with the things that so many of the cancer warriors out there deal with in their lives.
Right.
And maybe do it and still have, you know, the unfortunate ending to their story. And so for me, it's about how can I motivate people? How can I inspire people? And how can I let them realize that whatever they're going through, it's, you can overcome it, you can live with it, you can manage it, and you continue to live and prosper and do the things that you're supposed to do despite this. And that's what it's really been for me, is how can I live a life that inspires others? And even this past Friday, we did the last workout of the CrossFit Open, and it has to be judged. And so one of the trainers there is judging me, and she's like, oh, you did amazing. And I remember towards the end of the workout, somebody was like, do you know he has leukemia? And she didn't know. that I had leukemia. Wow. She was like, they just told me you have leukemia. So I was explaining it to her and explaining to her the muscle fatigue. And she was just like, I thought you did a great job just, you know, not even knowing that. Now that I know that, it's even crazier. And it's just another thing to fight against and another thing to push and be a part of. It's part of my life and I can embrace it or you can hate it. And so I've chosen to embrace it and chosen to do the best I can with it. And that's why, you know, as somebody who follows FSW, you guys have gotten to know over the past year, my best friend, one of my two best friends, Miranda Morales, she coined the phrase, you know, nothing can stop Greg DeMarco. And she coined the phrase unstoppable. And so unstoppable is a word that has been all over my social media posts everywhere. I've even started a brand that I'm going to start marketing soon. Nice. Called Unstoppable. It's an apparel brand and CrossFit's going to be a part of it as well. They want to be on board and help with that. And it's really about overcoming obstacles and about living the best life you can, despite whatever, because we all have something.
Yeah.
We all have something that's a strike against us, something that we got to deal with, something we got to fight. And there's two ways you can go. You can let it take you or you can take it. And I've chosen to take it. And that's where we are now. And that's what we're going to continue to do. It's just crazy, but I truly feel like I feel lucky that I have it. And I feel lucky that it is what it is and not something worse. And I feel like there's a tremendous amount of impact that can come out of it.
You know, speaking of being 44 and I'm in that same ballpark at 45, mm-hmm. And then just thinking, you know, life in general, especially getting, you know, some kind of a diagnosis like that. Are you finding yourself now kind of looking back at, you know, kind of like the 90s, early 2000s, at the society as it was then, at who you were then, at what things now, you know, spark a certain emotion, mm-hmm. if you hear a certain song or watch a certain movie, that you know, it's bringing you back to a place of youth. Is that something you're starting to experience now? And do you think that that's something we all kind of go through in terms of relating that to, you know, when your parents would maybe show you a movie from the 1960s or 50s that they loved? And, you know, as a kid, younger, you might think, oh, that's kind of stupid or lame or whatever. But now you can kind of see where that desire for something like that is equivalent to your own desire from something of your youth. And are you looking forward to when your kids are looking at you as grandpa now and having that same realization that there's this huge circle that everyone kind of goes through?
It's interesting that you say that. So I think the best years of my life outside of now were definitely when I was in college. And, you know, I graduated college in 1999. And I look back and when things pop up, those college memories, those are huge. You know, high school, middle school, I didn't have the best childhood ever and we were kind of poor. And so to me, it's more when I look back to college and I was finally out on my own, yeah. to where I met my wife and just things we went through. We look back on those times with such great happiness and just the fondest memories ever. So a lot of things trigger that. I've also, for most of my professional life, worked professionally, you know, outside of wrestling, in the college environment. So I've worked with that same age group for a long time. So it kind of keeps you young. And yeah. when I wasn't working with that type of population, it was very different. And so it always kind of takes me back there. It's weird when you talk about, oh, the 2000s, 90s or whatever. I, at 44, am in much better shape mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually than I was at 34.
Sure.
And I actually feel like my 30s were almost, I don't want to say they were wasted because, you know, I got a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old. So that's 10 years of their lives.
Sure.
But personally, it's like there's probably a lot more I could have done during that decade of my life that I didn't. And that's why they say 40 is the new 30, right? Because I think you think you got to get it all done in your 20s, and then your 30s, you kind of lounge around trying to figure out what you're supposed to be doing. And then you figure it out when you're hitting your 40s, and it's like, yeah. okay, now we start living. And that's how I feel right now. So it's a mix of that, but I'm not very good at looking back on things. It's sure. one of my flaws. I'm not very retrospective, even though there's a lot we can learn from our past. So I am very much focused on the present, and I do not feel like a 44-year-old man at all. Like, I feel like somebody who's 34 years old. And and that's how I live my life. And that's both good and bad. And that's really what I look like. And my wife is the same exact way. That's just who we are as people. And I've had people tell me, like, you know, I don't look at you as somebody who's that age. I look at you as somebody who's this age. And that's just, right. You know, it's great. But at the same time, you got to remember who you are. But for me, it's a mix of that you talked about. Things do kind of bring me back to the college age. I don't think anything brings me back to like my 30s at all. Like, I really don't. But the here and now is also, you know, despite all the stuff we talked about before, the here and now is huge and is fantastic. Sure. And that's something that I'm focused on, making the best here and now ever.
No, I totally agree with you on the perspective of the 30s. I think that you actually used the right term, and that is kind of wasted time when you look back at those. Like, yeah, it's like nothing sparks memories from that age period.
It's like, what did I even do during that time? What was I even doing? I don't even know. No, I was up late doing stuff with kids and all that, but it's just, it's crazy to think. Like, I remember when I turned 40, I didn't know what it was going to be like, but the day I turned 40, it was like, it actually felt good. For some crazy reason, because I guess I always thought 40 was going to feel so old. And the day I turned 40, I was like, it doesn't feel like that at all. It's like, I really do have the rest of my life ahead of me. And that's a good thing. And it's like, here we go. And so much of the great things that I've been able to do happened after the age of 40. So that's a big part of why I'm enjoying it so much.
Well, I think, you know, what's interesting too, and you can look at guys like Navajo that are very much, you know, like yourself, when you look at someone like that, you can't tell at all that, you know, you're looking at someone who's in the age range of 40 to 50 because of the fact that the good shape everyone seems to be in now. Mm-hmm. You know, the remarkable thing is that when we were kids, if you looked at a 40-year-old, they looked like they're 60. You know? Yeah. It's like, it's true. You know, not once did I ever, you know, hit that movie scenario of, you know, looking at your mom's friend like, wow, she's, you know, damn, you know.
Never happened.
Yeah, it was like always looking at like, oh, look, another grandma, you know.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting that it's kind of through the science and the technology that we are extending that youthfulness. And I think society too, with corporations focusing on youth being the main market for everything, it kind of almost forces us to stay young and stay active, because if not, then it's like it's passing us by, and all of a sudden now, you know, you are an old fuddy-duddy because, you know, you're not accepting and embracing the fact that, you know, youth culture will still keep you young.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's the great thing about working with college students for so long, is that you got to be able to speak to them and understand what they're going through. And so to do that, you're going to have to keep up. And same with wrestling fans. Like, I need to put on events that wrestling fans want to go to.
Right.
And that means knowing what they like and knowing what they'll buy tickets for. Because I can't put on an event that I would just love from start to finish and to please me.
Right.
Because I'm not everybody else. I get to come for free and I do all the work. So it's you know, part of it. But I need to draw people in. So I've got to put together an event that appeals to everybody. And that might mean doing something, you know, doing stuff that I wouldn't like. You know, I joked with people backstage last time at IZW, and they were just like, you know, oh, you got that match on there, that's so stupid. And I was like, yeah, what do I know? I just keep selling out events one after the other. I have no idea what I'm doing. And they just laugh, because I know that they put on events and their events don't draw what ours do, but they don't have to. And so that's fine. But it's just, you know, the goals are different. And so in order to do that, I got to see what everybody likes, and I got to do stuff that, you know, people like from all different scenarios. That's why if you watch an IZW event now, and then you go back and watch like some old school Memphis, you'll see a very clear delineation between the two. We are very Memphis, where you had the shenanigans, you had the long-term feuds, and you also had the great wrestling. And that's really what we do and what we put on. but it does. It keeps you that youthful spirit. And I think that's something that one of the reasons why Navajo at 49 years old can never say when he's going to hang up the boots, because I think he still looks so forward to it, because it does. It keeps him young as well when he's backstage and he's helping out these youngsters and he's in the ring working with the youngsters. We used him in 2018. I was helping book a company that no longer exists called Sonoran Championship Wrestling. And we had him work in a match. It was a five-way, and he was one of the people in it. And I remember I'm watching this match, and I hadn't worked with Nav in a while, and he throws a drop kick. So at the time, he's probably like 47, 46 years old. He throws this drop kick, and I'm just like, he just hit a drop kick. Like, I didn't know he would hit a drop kick. And I'm joking with him after. I was like, you hit a drop kick. And he was like, man, they were hitting all kinds of moves. I had to do something. And it was just, you know, it does keep you young. And I think it's why he does it as well, is it just keeps you that youthful, that vibrance that you see in there. I mean, it's crazy to think that some of the talent that we have, you know, at 44 years old, 20 years older than them. I don't feel like I'm 20 years older than them. I don't think I look like I'm 24 years older than them, but I'm 20 years older than them. And that just keeps you young, and that keeps you excited, and that keeps things, keep things vibrant. And so hopefully that never changes.
You know, with that idea of the youngsters, the 20 year olds, and working with students in an environment of putting them on a show, especially with only running quarterly shows, what is it that you look for in a student that gets you to give the green light to put them on one of the cards?
It's interesting, because it's, people ask me that all the time. And I actually spoke to the students at the Arizona Pro Wrestling Training Center back in December, and they asked about that. And the first thing I told them was that I won't even look at the student until Don Vitale says they're ready.
Yeah.
And I won't even, you know, and even with the other students, we're using a student at our next event who has only had a handful of matches, and he's working Mercury Aiden out of Colorado. And it's because Navajo Warrior was like, I watched him, I think he can do well, and I think we should use him. And so that's where that stamp of approval comes from. So, and I have that luxury with ICW and the way that we lean on our veterans. I don't really make that decision. Yeah. I base it off of the opinions of others and those that I trust and those that I've known. I've known Navajo Warrior since 2007. I've known Don Vitale since like 2008, 2009. So we're talking people that I've known for 12 plus years.
Yeah.
And I trust their opinion. And so when they say this person's ready, then okay, let's use them. And then I see what they have in the ring. And that's when I make that decision. But it's great for me that I don't have to really watch all this stuff and make a decision whether or not to book them, because I lean on those who I know. Right. And I've never worked a match in my life. I've taken two bumps as a heel manager and had to learn how to do it right before I did it, basically. and that was in like 2009, 2010. So, and they got a huge pop both times I did them. So it was worth it. But that's extended my training in the ring. All of my training has come behind the scenes, learning on the fly. And so when they give somebody the stamp of approval, then I watch them. And then I see what they can do. Most of my feedback to talent actually comes when they cut promos. Most of my feedback isn't what they're doing in the ring. I'll tell their trainer. I remember the first IZW event back, Proving Ground, October 2019. We had a four-way that was supposed to go like, it was a four-way and it was an elimination match. I think it was booked to go like 16 minutes or whatever. And it was over in 10. And I remember I remember showing the sheet to Don. I was just like, this match was supposed to go 6-7 minutes longer. And he told him backstage, he was just like, that first elimination happened a minute of the match. It was supposed to be 5 minutes of the match. Like, read the format. Know what you're supposed to be doing. And it's, if I tell him that, it's one thing.
Right.
But if a guy who's been doing this 20 years tells him that, it's a whole nother thing. But they know I can talk. They know that when I was on stage in wrestling, all I did was talk. So when I see somebody cut a promo and I give them feedback, I'm like, you rushed through this. You didn't enunciate here. They're willing to listen to that more than if I said, oh, you hit this move at the wrong spot or whatever, because I don't really know what the hell I'm talking about if I say that.
Right.
But I do when I talk about the promos and when I talk about the production stuff. So I got to know where I'm good, and I got to trust the other people where I'm not, and that's what's going to make this so much better.
As we start to get ready to wrap up here, it leads me to one of the most important thoughts along those lines, and that is when you're watching, whether it be shows that you're running or other shows, or just even wrestling on TV from the major companies, Do you see the difference between a wrestler who, or talent even in general, whether it be a manager or, you know, even a referee to that point? Do you see the difference between someone who goes out there confidently knowing what they're going to go to the ring to do? Meaning, wrestlers today, sometimes they just kind of look lost when they walk through the curtain. And you can see it translated to a match that they're doing things that don't necessarily make sense. And it almost seems like they don't walk out there wanting to win the match. You know, a motivation. There's no motivation. Do you see people who find that piece of motivation seem to go farther in the business because they're able to present the reality of what they're currently in that moment? I know it's a complex question of a sense, but does that make sense to you? And can you see those wrestlers who have that motivation, absolutely, you know, come off a better performer?
100%. So this is something that I've coined before, and I even see it on television with talent that makes it to television and still has this. And to me, it's a difference between playing a wrestler and being a wrestler, in my opinion. That's the big difference. And you can see that person's a wrestler or that person's playing wrestling. And that's, and some people will make it to the highest level and it's still like, they're out there pretending to be a wrestler. That's, you know, it's sad, but, and, you know, all my social media feeds are very different in what's on them. And Twitter tends to be where you get like this opinionated asshole out of me. And I don't follow a lot of AEW because to me, a lot of them are playing wrestler and it's like, you know, they're achieving this dream, going out there and getting to be a wrestler and play a wrestler. And I look for people that when they walk through the curtain, they are a wrestler. They're not out there playing a character. They are that character. They are that. And that's a talent. That's one of those things I don't think you can teach it. I think you can train somebody and bring it out of them if it's in there. Right. If it's not in there, that's never going to be there. And that then they, and there's something else for them and something else that they can be amazing at, but this ain't it. And so go find what that is and do it. And, you know, one of our wrestlers who also trains people in a whole other state was complaining that someone left training and they just said, this isn't for me. And was just openly complaining about it and wished the person didn't give up. And I remember telling them, you helped them discover that. Let that go. Let them go find whatever they're going to be good at, because they probably never were going to get to the standard you wanted them to be at, because you're a wrestler. You're believable as a wrestler when you go out there and people will buy into what you're doing. But that's really the big difference. And I always say it's whether or not this person gets it, right? Do they get it? And get it is obviously a loaded phrase. It's just two words, five letters, but it means everything. Either you get it or you don't. Right. And I can't force you to get it. Yeah, you know, some people get it later, but I even have people occasionally, we have people on our own events that are, I can still be like, okay, they're still playing wrestler. It's time to go be a wrestler. And it's because it was this lifelong dream, but they're out there just doing what they've seen other people do, not figuring out what it is they do. I remember having this conversation with a wrestler one time and he's out there and he's, you know, he looks like a brawler. He talks like a brawler. Everything he does is a brawler. But then in the ring, he's doing this lucha shit. And I'm like, stop with the lucha. You should never flip. Like, you just shouldn't. It's you want that pop and that's fine, but you don't have to do all that. Like your character doesn't have to do all that. You and you'll have far less injuries and you could work a whole heck of a lot longer if you don't do those things. Go out there. You know, it's like Navajo warrior, right? He's Native American. So it makes sense when he does Native American things. If, you know, Thugnificent, for example, goes out there and does a war dance, ain't gonna make any sense. He's playing a wrestler at that point, but he is Thugnificent when he's out there working as Thugnificent. That's believable. And that's who you're buying into. And that's what makes all the difference in the world to me. So that's, what you described is the difference between playing a wrestler and being a wrestler. And you see it across all levels. You see it on television now at the high. You will see it a couple of Sundays from now at WrestleMania. There will be the person or two on there who's actually, you'll be like, and it's because they're playing wrestler and not being wrestler.
Yeah, that's, in, you know, that's very interesting too that you brought up that comparison of Thugnificent and Navajo. What I love about that type of thing is if someone like Thugnificent is so comfortable and invested in his character. Boy, what a heel thing to do when you are making fun of a guy like Navajo to his face when you get in the ring. You know, you're able to start incorporating stuff that, you know, it works, you know, especially from the heel aspect, that you can be, you know, such a dick because you're already confident in the character that you are. And, you know, it's just remarkable to see that kind of stuff. Finally, as we wrap up here, can you give your social media sites, things that people can look for and find yourself and also all the projects that you might be doing?
Yeah, definitely. So for the Chair Shot, obviously thechairshot.com is the website. That's where you can find all the articles that we do, everything we put out. The Chair Shot Radio Network is also there. It's also on all of your favorite streaming platforms, just like, you know, just like the stuff that you guys do in the Vegas Bad Boys podcast, you know, iTunes, Spotify, you know, iHeart, Google Play, all those are out there. We don't have our own app, so you guys do. So step ahead of us in that direction. But and go follow and you know, like, subscribe, leave the review, all that stuff. At Chairshot Media is the social media handles for all three social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The website, and that's definitely the way you can follow along there. For IZW, it's in all three of the same for there as well. It's at IZW Wrestling AZ. So it's two W's, IZW Wrestling AZ for Arizona, because there was another IZW in Oklahoma that started after the original one started and then ended before we brought this one back. And they're cool. Like, I've talked to them. It's not like they're upset or anything. He was like, when did you guys start? I was like, 2000. He was like, oh, okay, never mind. I think they started in like 2006. But back then, like, who knew?
Right.
Who knew the different parts of the world? But everybody's right. Cool. You know, I mean, people, you know, look at us and be like, Impact Wrestling, haha. And I'm like, well, we started 2 years before they did. So it's not saying they stole it from us. They didn't. But
yeah, sure.
You can't say we stole it from them either. But at IZW Wrestling AZ, we're working on the website, IZWWrestling.com. I'm revamping it, so it'll be up and running soon in advance of this one. But we didn't get a whole lot of use out of it. We were really getting everything through social media, so we're focusing more on that, and we're going to kind of pare down and make the website useful in a different way here shortly. So that'll be changing around very, very soon. So keep following along there. That's also where you can get links to our ticket sales. We are almost – it's you know, late March as we record this, and the May 15th event's almost sold out. So if you're local or close by, because we get people that come down from Nevada, California, Colorado, Texas, all over that come to our events. That's the great thing about being quarterly, is that people can make those trips. Buy your tickets while you can, because it will sell out, just like all the other ones have. You know, once we announced that we were doing the Bloodsport match, a bunch of tickets got sold again, because they're like, it's never happened in the state of Arizona.
Yeah,
somebody might try to pull it off between now and then, but I don't think they will. But it's never happened, and even if they do, they're not going to have, you know, Graves and the Hawaiian Lion to do it with. So it's you know, we do it right. But Regulate, which is named after our new World Heavyweight Champion, Thugnificent, will take place on May 15th. All those details. Thugnificent will be challenged by Watson. So for you Vegas fans, obviously familiar with Watson, he's our number one contender. He beat Mr. Classic in the ladder match at Monster in February to earn that number one contendership. So they will battle out, and Thugnificent's first time defending that championship, and we'll see if he's able to retain it and continue to move forward from there. We've got a lot. We've got a strap match with the Navajo Warrior and Gino Rivera.
Oh, Jesus.
Nav 30. Yeah. We talked about before, you know, the heel that mocks that. Gino, the whole build to Nav 30 was this big celebration of 30 years of Navajo Warrior, and Gino spent the whole time trying to track the man down and cut him down, and because he wasn't giving Gino the respect he deserves, he felt. And so, and then Gino beat him in February. Gino actually beat the Navajo Warrior in February, used the Navajo Warrior strap against him, and that's how he was able to pull off the victory. And then our commissioner decided to put him in a strap match. So they will fight it out in a strap match, part of our triple main event. The strap match, along with the Bloodsport match, along with our heavyweight championship match. That's our triple main event on May 15th. So link in bio, as you always say on Instagram, yeah. But really at IZW Wrestling AZ on any social media platform, you'll be able to grab those tickets and see all the great things that we're doing. We've got an old school tag team match. We've got the Memphis special that I'm calling it, where you've got two wrestlers that are wrestling and their managers are going to be handcuffed to each other at ringside. Cause they've been getting in each other's business for months now. And so many more matches that haven't even been announced yet that will be announced in the coming weeks and months. We've got a handful of tickets left and I haven't even announced half the card. So It's just crazy and mind blowing to me that how successful we've been able to be at this. And I love it. And that's why we keep working so hard to pull that off. And for me, at Chairshot Greg, since I do run the Chairshot, is the best way to follow along. Facebook tends to be a lot of wrestling and IZW related stuff, because that's been our primary source of ticket sales and push there. Twitter tends to be where I argue with wrestling fans and get called an idiot. I made a tweet last week, I think Wednesday or Thursday, complaining about how nobody was coming at Tony Khan for running a house show during WrestleMania week on Friday, when SmackDown has no fans in attendance. So he's not hurting WWE. All he's really hurting are the indies that run down there, and they're supposed to be indie friendly. And somehow MJF saw that tweet. I'm guessing somebody told him about it, probably Tony Khan or one of his minions. And so they've been coming at me for days. So that's really hilarious and a lot of fun. I'm blocked by probably 1.5 million people at this point, and I'm fine with it. But at Chairshot Greg on Twitter, that's usually me telling people they're stupid about their opinions on wrestling. And then Instagram at Chairshot Greg is mainly focused on family and fitness and all of that. So that's where you tend to get the health updates, along with Facebook and what's going on with the chronic myeloid leukemia and all the fitness stuff as well. Instagram for the past 6 months has really been taken off, and I try to put something out there almost daily and update people. And I've made a lot of really cool connections, people that have CML from all over the world. I have somebody even like Germany who has CML that will message me on occasion, see how I'm doing. And it's really, really, it just makes the world smaller. Yeah. Social media does. And so being able to do that and having this other way of connecting with people that are dealing with the same thing you're dealing with, whether it's recent or it's been a few years, that's something that is just been crazy to me and mind blowing. And again, that keeps you young and keeps you youthful. But at Chairshot Greg on any of them is the best way to find me. You can follow on all three if you're on all three, because all the content's different. And I always say reach out. And if I didn't follow you back, hit me up and I will. But it's just hard sometimes, because sometimes the mentions kind of blow up and you can't see them all. But that's really the best way to follow along everything, and all the IZW stuff I share everywhere, because it's so near and dear to my heart, and the fan base and the whole IZW family has been so amazing and special for me. But that's really the best way to find everything.
Well, I appreciate you giving the rundown there. I definitely encourage people who haven't checked out, IZW or, your personal pages to do so, because you're doing some great stuff and you're going through a very positive journey, not just with the leukemia, but also with the life transformation that you've made with the weight loss and the progress is just very inspiring to those of us who, every now and then when you just kind of look in the mirror and go, I need to get into the gym. I need to do this. I need to change my habits and my lifestyles. And it's always good to have that inspiration as well, to look at someone who's been able to accomplish it. And it's very important. And I think that, if anyone who's watching or listening could use that help as well, please just follow and see the journey and know it's possible.
Yeah, and hit me up. I've lightly started working with some people directly and helping them out as well. And that's something that I'm going to be building and growing and marketing soon. But at the same time, it's just, I did it all during COVID, which we all thought was impossible. But here we are. I think COVID made it easier for me, because it stripped away a lot of the craziness of life just by the nature of the fact that we couldn't do a lot of those things. They were taken away from us. I think it was Eminem who told us you only get one shot to not miss your chance. So that's what way I'm looking at life now. I didn't always look at it that way, but for the past few years have. And then you get all this momentum, and then you get something like a leukemia diagnosis, and it's like, well, you can go one way or the other, and we're going to keep going the same direction. I do want to say, and obviously thank you and the whole Vegas Bad Boys Podcast Network for having me on, number one. And number two, I always love the name of your show, which is, you know, Matt Michaels People I Don't Hate. Because I think our standard these days is love, and we have to love everything, right? And if we don't love it, we hate it. And we're quick, you know, it takes about 8 seconds to get canceled in this world. It's just the way, you know, we're too quick to cancel and too slow to forgive and understand. And the fact that, you know, your standard is just don't hate you. That's great. Like life is so much better when it's just like, well, I don't hate this person. So they can come in and come on. I really do like that and appreciate that. And I think that while it's funny and we joke about it, I think there's a lot to be learned there because our standard, you know, is it's everything's love or hate now. It's right. One extreme or the other. And really 95% of life we live is somewhere in the middle in that gray area. So, find reasons not to hate.
But, you know, isn't that so funny too, that now that you say that, it makes me think, boy, you know, nowadays we spend, because there's only just this fragment of, you know, whether it be entertainment or media or politics, whatever it is, sports, there's only a fragment that actually, you know, puts things out. But we as people end up chasing our own tails for our whole life because, you know, essentially it comes down to that. You know, the divisions are being made. And so you're just arguing with each other constantly in a circle. And it's like, dude, common ground. Very simple.
Sorry. I made this comment last week to somebody and we're having a conversation. I think it was actually church related, which I don't really do, but it was basically about, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid and someone's literally drinking the Kool-Aid. And it hit me. I was like, you know, I think a lot of people spend a lot of energy and effort trying to find what Kool-Aid they're going to drink next. And it's like, their life isn't complete if they're not just buying into something and being led by it. People want to be led. And there's few of us that are like, I'd rather, you know, mix my own drink and go from there. And it's, I really do think that people are just jumping from Kool-Aid to Kool-Aid, and because otherwise they feel directionless. And I don't know if media has caused us to become that way, if social media has caused us to become that way, but you don't need that, man. You can live your own life and you can make your own decisions and you can do your own great things. You don't have to buy into somebody else's. And that's what we're taught. You know, we go to college so we can get a job and work for somebody else. Like that's what my life was for the longest time. And part of it still is, right? I still have a job.
Right.
But to be able to create and to be able to create opportunities and create and grow is something that is great. And that's why I harbor on the AEW stuff all the time, because it's such a big Kool-Aid thing. People drinking the Kool-Aid. A funny comment was made on Twitter, I think today or yesterday. And it basically was, I made the comment about, you know, AEW running on a Friday during WrestleMania week with a slap in the face in the indies. And the comment was, this Greg person obviously doesn't care about independent wrestling if he's making a comment like that. And I just busted out laughing. And somebody else replied in the comments and they were like, do you know what he actually runs an independent wrestling promotion? I was like, I run an indie. I actively work to make it better. I actively work to make paydays bigger. Like I actively do everything we can to make this the best scene possible. But it's so funny that someone was like, you obviously don't care about independent wrestling, making a comment like that. And I'm like, few people care more about independent wrestling than someone like me. But it just makes me smile and laugh because it's like, you're just drinking the Kool-Aid and that's fine. You know, keep drinking it and keep going. But yeah, people really do live their life to jump from Kool-Aid bottle to Kool-Aid bottle. And that's just not a way to live. And I feel bad for them. I don't know how to change it though. I really don't. All I can do is try to be that positive influence. And hopefully they come around and somebody smarter than me figures out how they can influence them, because it's bad out there. Especially on Twitter. It's bad out there.
And, you know, and it's fascinating because in a sense, the one thing that I think that is absolutely the telltale sign is that people don't want to be wrong. And that is what it comes down to. So you'll be stubborn enough to stick with what you believe in or are convinced to believe in. And what's very interesting is it's like a heel manager at that point, because you have a belief. The belief might not be a correct belief, you know, based on morals or, you know, something along the lines, you know, of the right or wrong, but yet you'll still believe in it and you'll still sell that and you'll keep doing it because your end goal is to basically be as self successful in your own mind's eye that you'll do anything to undercut someone else to make you feel better about yourself. And it just sucks.
It does. No, that's the truth completely. Everybody just wants to be right. And one of the things that if you listen to the podcast I put out, I have no problem being wrong. And in fact, I like being wrong because then you learn something. And that's been the great thing about something like IZW and just running pro wrestling events in general. You realize how much better it is when you don't do it all yourself and you rely on other people who are smarter than you in certain aspects. And they rely on you when you're smarter than them in certain aspects and you learn and you grow and everybody does their part. But then you look at a place like Twitter, which is a cesspool for people who are just want to be right. And all they want to do is dish out L's everywhere they go. Yeah. And it's like, okay. And then when you log off, what have you accomplished?
Yeah.
You either still have the same great life or the same miserable life you had before you sent that tweet. You know, right. And to me, that's just, you know, why? So for me, honestly, all the stuff on Twitter is entertaining to me, and it's entertainment. And when I go off and that's, you know, I got a text message right before we went on air that was just like, how has it been since AZW sent all their, or since AEW sent all their fans against you? And it's just like, oh, I hadn't even looked, but it's really just, you know, it's just not as big of a deal as people think it is.
Right.
Like, there's so much life out there outside of social media. And while it's great and while it's been a great promotional tool for all of us, it's just a small snippet of life like you talked about earlier. And yet we put, you know, so much, a large percentage of our life and our life's worth and how we feel about ourselves into these people that sit behind a keyboard or a keypad on a phone. And it's like, who are they? You know, there's real people close by you that you could probably spend a lot more time with and be a lot happier if you just logged off a little bit. And it's right. We all fall victim to it, myself included. But yeah, it's just, it's so much negativity. It doesn't need to be.
Yeah. Well, on that note, everyone, I appreciate you tuning in and listening. And again, check out all the things that Greg is up to. There's so much good stuff going on, not only in his life, but in Arizona and in Arizona wrestling. And we want, you know, to make sure that it keeps growing. And thank you guys for your time, and we'll see you next time.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.